Afternoon. I will call this meeting of the House Finance and Policy Committee to order and note a quorum is present. Lee Johnson, have you had a chance to review the minutes of April 9th?
I have reviewed them and I make a motion to approve.
Motion to approve the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Minutes are approved. Members, we are going to do a presentation of the House Finance and Policy Supplemental Budget Bill today. We're not going to take any formal action. But we will have time to present the bill, have nonpartisan staff walk through it in a little more detail, have an opportunity for testimony and some member discussion, and then tomorrow we'll do markup with any amendments. And so with that, I'll just offer some comments from here, and first just want to thank the committee for their work this session, and especially want to thank our staff. Our nonpartisan staff who've been working around the clock by the minute. As of now, they probably wish they could be back at their offices as we get ready for tomorrow. But Justin Cope, Katrina Highmark, and Mary Davis. I want to thank our committee staff, Jack Dockendorf, Emma Erdahl, our researchers, Molly Peterson and Jacob Grundhauser, and our page, Connor Beckel. Members, this housing, finance, and policy bill is a continuation of our work last year and our vision to make Minnesota a place where everyone as a safe and stable home that they can afford. And in particular, this bill's emphasis is a focus on housing stability, grounded in the notion that without housing, nothing else in our lives are going to go right. And we are really focused on the crises that Minnesotans are facing to do all we can to make that a reality for Minnesotans. And before delving into the details, I do want to level set and remind folks of the great work we did last year in our $1 billion investment across the continuum of housing, and again, really view this supplemental budget bill as an extension or truly a supplement. You know, we took important strides to prevent homelessness with nearly $100 million in FHPAP. And most of those resources have been allocated, and 6,400 households have been served by those resources. We also created vouchers, state-based vouchers, for the first time ever. 5,000 families will have access to state-based vouchers. We're going to build more homes and preserve more homes through housing infrastructure. The agency has already deployed over $350 million that represent more than 4,700 homes that we've impacted, both homes to own, rental homes, and preserving homes. Through our community stabilization, we're going to preserve the naturally occurring affordable housing we already have. Through our Greater Minnesota Workforce Fund, local housing aid, and infrastructure grants, we've made historic investments specific to the challenges in Greater Minnesota. And certainly, last but not least, we made historic investments in creating homeownership opportunities for more Minnesotans. Representative Gbadje's first-generation down payment assistance, Representative Hassan's homeownership investment grants, hundreds of millions of dollars will create thousands of new Minnesota homeowners. And Minnesota Housing has already deployed more than $400 million of those resources, and we know more will be implemented this year. And so I just wanted to set that grounding because I think it's important. And the dollars, admittedly much smaller dollars, in this supplemental budget should be viewed in that context and recognize that, yes, we made important progress, but also Minnesotans continue to struggle. And over the last year, some of those challenges have really grown. Evictions were up last year 40% from pre-eviction levels. The last Wilder report detailed that on a given night, 10,000 Minnesotans were homeless. And our nonprofit affordable housing providers providing some of thousands of units of housing for some of our most at-risk Minnesotans are in serious challenges. And so with these limited resources, we thought it'd be prudent to focus our investments where Minnesotans are most at risk, and also apply a lens that says we want to deploy dollars that can be employed quickly and for great impact. And with that lens, that's led us to a few focuses in this bill. With our $10 million one-time target, the lion's share of that will be going to FHPAP for emergency rental assistance, rapid rehousing, and homelessness prevention. As I mentioned, family homelessness continues to be a challenge all across Minnesota. Rents continue to escalate. We're not able to snap our fingers or wave a magic wand to build the kind of housing we need to do. We started down that path last year, but of course need much more. And we know that FHPAP will have a big impact. It did last year. of the dollars we spent, anecdotally talking to county administrators, they were able to serve closer to 50% of the folks that are coming their way, still having to say no to the other 50%. Before that, we were talking about, we had testifiers say that, you know, a quarter, 4 months of FHPAP dollars would be used up in 1 week. And so with most of those emergency dollars spent, it's wise for us to deploy those resources. We know they can be deployed quickly and literally be the difference in a family being able to stay in their home or be homeless. So we believe that makes sense. Another big focus is preserving housing for Minnesotans who are living in our aging affordable housing operated by our nonprofit providers. This committee's heard testimony about the challenges that these housing providers are facing due to no fault of their own. Exploding insurance costs, security costs, rehab needs, at the same time declining revenues with rent collection, with vacancy rates due to systems failure, with coordinated entry, and bills due on rehab on projects that at a level that was never really contemplated. And to the how we got here front, I know this has come up, you know, what about the budget reserves? Why aren't you prepared, et cetera? I just thought it's important to say that fundamentally, when a lot of these housing developments were publicly financed decades ago, you know, the plan, there wasn't really a plan in perpetuity for these housing providers to remain affordable. I think back in the 80s, 90s, a lot of the idea was that these buildings would transition to market rate and we will have built a lot more housing, invested more in public housing. The reality at all levels of government, we haven't done that. And these nonprofit housing providers operating tens of thousands of units across the state are vital right now to the infrastructure of housing in our state. And if they are at risk, that means tens of thousands of Minnesotans are at risk. And so what we've done is deployed or redeployed about $50 million of resources that we passed last year and created a grant program designed to stabilize affordable housing for as many Minnesotans as we can by focusing those investments on distressed properties that otherwise could be at risk of foreclosure, sale, displacing Minnesotans who literally would have no other place to go. Third, we do make a $50 million investment in housing infrastructure bonds, our bread and butter way to make investments and create more housing across the continuum, whether we're talking about affordable rental all the way to home ownership. And there's a few other task force pieces in the bill that I think we can hit on when nonpartisan staff walks through the bill. But I wanted to share those three high-level major investments we're making in this bill. We also include a number of policy provisions that are responsive to the challenges Minnesotans are facing, again, focused on the housing stability of Minnesotans. And so a few of those are, you know, ensuring that when we're building affordable housing, we are not building it on the backs of workers and renters and we're treating with dignity and respect. We're ensuring that landlords cannot discriminate based on their source of income. We're addressing rent gouging of seniors in living in fixed incomes and ensuring that with our metro sales tax we passed last year, we're maximizing those resources for their intended purposes. Members, this is a good bill that builds on the great work we did last session. And last thing I'll say is just to state the obvious, it's not enough. The needs are growing. We need to continue to make investments and implement the resources we passed last year. We believe this will help on our continued work and our continued vision to get to a place where Minnesotans all have access to a safe and stable place called home. And with that opening, I'd like to turn it over to nonpartisan staff just to sort of walk through in a little greater detail what is in the bill. Mr. Cope.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, Justin Cope, House Research. I'll be walking through Article 2 of the bill. Section 1 of Article 2 was in HF 4271 and exempts public corporations created by housing redevelopment authorities from certain obligations that apply to other public corporations. Section 2, 6 through 12, and 19 are all provisions from the agency's policy bill, HF 4735, which relate to an expansion of certain provisions for climate-related work to include a broader range of climate initiatives, including clean energy, decarbonization, and greenhouse gas emissions reduction. Section 3 comes from HF 4819 and has a new definition of a distressed building, which is a building in which households are at or below 60% area median income that's experiencing one or more forms of financial distress. Section 4 is also from HF 4819. It defines recapitalization for the purposes of the chapter governing MHFA to mean financing for certain operational costs, capital restructuring, debt forgiveness, and maintenance and reimbursement to a nonprofit or paid for one of those expenses. Section 5 is also from HF 4819 and allows use of a program for refinancing mortgages to fund loans for recapitalization. Skipping ahead to Section 13, since Section 6 through 12 are all the climate-related policy changes that I discussed earlier, Section 13 is also from HF 4735 and would expand the scope of programs which MHFA is able to deem Indian tribes and tribally designated housing entities as eligible recipients of their funding to include programs that are enacted through session law as opposed to the chapter governing MHFA. Section 14 is a series of labor standards that would apply to recipients of MHFA funding. This was included in a slightly different form in HF 4569. Section 15 was from the agency's policy bill, HF 4735, and allows MHFA to adjust rent and income limits to meet federal standards for the low-income housing tax credit and exempt facility bonds. Section 16, also from HF 4735, allows MHFA to determine that a household meets rent or income requirements of one of its program if the household receives means-tested public assistance benefit. Section 17 is new and would allow a public corporation created by a housing redevelopment authority for the purposes of positioning in the federally assisted rental housing repositioning programs to receive funding from the publicly owned housing program. Section 18 is from HF 4556, which implements some recommendations from the work group on expediting rental assistance. That would require MHFA to consult with the Department of Human Services to determine how to project the amount of money necessary to fully fund all of the state's emergency rental assistance programs. Section 19, again from the agency's policy bill, is one of the climate-related sections I discussed earlier. Section 20 is from HF 4819 and modifies the PERF program so that the eligible mortgage standard does not apply to buildings seeking recapitalization as defined earlier in the bill. Section 21 is from the agency's policy bill and raises the agency's debt ceiling. Section 22 is a limitation on rental increases in senior housing receiving the low-income housing tax credit. This is from Representative Stevenson's HF 3350 with two changes. The first, that the requirement that the rental increases be limited to the Social Security increases less 1% has been changed so that it's limited just to the Social Security increases without the 1% reduction. And this is also limiting application of the limitation to not apply to buildings owned by nonprofits or units in which the resident has a rental subsidy. Section 23 is from the agency policy bill, HF 4735, and conforms the section to some changes made in the 2023 legislative session with respect to the Manufactured Home Relocation Trust Fund. Section 24 is a combination of sections from HF 4194, 4735, and 4819 and modifies uses of the Housing Infrastructure Bond Program. This would allow use of recapitalization use also so that the provisions governing use of foreclosed and abandoned housing would also be allowed to be used for affordable home ownership opportunities. It would reduce the fraction of housing units required to be operated as supporting housing for the purposes of the supportive housing uses of housing infrastructure bonds. It would allow the bond proceeds to be used on cooperatively owned housing, and it specifies that a requirement for accessibility only requires one roll-in shower in one of the accessible units required under that section. Sections 25 and 26 authorize the issuance of $50 million in housing infrastructure bonds and appropriates to the agency the amount necessary to cover the debt service on those bonds. Sections 27 through 29 are all from the agency's housing, the agency's bill. Section 27 removes some geographic and population limits from the Workforce Housing Development Program. Section 28 removes a set-aside from the Minnesota Housing Tax Credit Program. Section 9 specifies that requirements applying to grants funded through the Housing Tax Credit Program also apply to loans. This would also reduce the scope of persons who are disqualified from receiving grants or loans under the program, and would allow MHFA to rely on applicants' disclosures and determine whether they are disqualified from receiving grants or loans under the program. Section 30 is a new section which is meant to track with the changes from HF 4271 and would allow a public corporation created by a housing redevelopment authority for the purposes of participating for the purposes of participating in the federal RAD program to receive funding through the POHP or publicly owned housing program. Sections 31 and 32 are also from HF 4712 and allow a housing redevelopment authority to create a public corporation for the purposes of participating in the federal RAD program. Sections 35 through 38 are all changes to the local housing aid program that was enacted and is funded by the Metropolitan Sales Tax that was imposed through last year's housing bill. These changes cumulatively would require that grantees, require that aid recipients report on whether they cut any of their locally funded housing expenditures during the receipt of the aid. It would add certain eligible uses to the list of things which aid could be spent on, to include the cost of operating shelter, transitional housing, supportive housing, or publicly owned housing. It would deem funds committed to a project within 3 years of the receipt if they were committed to a project within the three-year deadline. It would allow cities and counties to opt out of receiving aid under the program, and it would modify the administration requirements of the program to conform to those changes. Sections 39 through 41 are from the agency's policy bill, HF 4735. Section 39 allows a set-aside of a 2023 appropriation for urban homeworks to be used on gap financing, and it broadens the range of low-income households that can receive funding through the appropriation. Section 40 expands the eligible uses of a Northland Fund appropriation to include assisting and supporting communities in providing housing. Section 41 removes a geographic requirement from the definition of eligible homebuyers for the purposes of the fee-based down payment assistance program. And sections 42 through 46 are all from HF 4556, which are sections implementing the work group on expediting rental assistance recommendations. Excuse me, that's inaccurate. Section 42 is a modified version of a provision from HF 4819, which establishes a task force within MHFA to determine ways to improve the financial health of affordable housing providers. And sections 43 through 46 are from HF 4556, which implements the WERA recommendations. Section 43 requires MHFA in consultation with DHS to develop recommendations to speed up the processing of emergency rental assistance. Section 44 encourages DHS and MHFA to develop uniform e-signature options. Section 45 encourages MHFA and DHS to make a number of changes to improve language access to the rental assistance programs. And Section 46 encourages MHFA to consult with DHS to simplify verification procedures for the state's rental assistance programs. Section 47 is new and establishes a grant program to fund recapitalization, as it's defined in this bill, to distressed buildings, as also defined earlier in this bill, and requires a report on that program on February 1st and November 30th of next year. And the last provision, Section 48, is from HF 4194, which requires the revisor's office to update the list of chapters governing cooperative associations to conform to HF 3800's enactment of Chapter 308C if that bill is enacted this year. And that concludes the walkthrough of priorities.
Thank you, Mr. Cope. And I'll turn it to Mrs. Davis.
Thank you, Chair and members. Mary Davis from the House Research Department. I am walking through Article 3, which just has two provisions, both of them starting on page 38. Section 1 prohibits a landlord from denying a rental unit to a tenant based on the use of public assistance or a rental subsidization, and provides remedies to enforce that provision. And Section 2 creates a working group. The work group is tasked with studying condos and HOAs, and it presents a number of issues that they're to study. It also provides members, including legislative members, the Commissioner of the Housing Finance Agency, a member from the Attorney General's Office, members of the public who have owned condos or HOAs, and members of the housing community, legal aid, realtors, and attorneys. It also provides for a report required by February 1, 2025, and this would complete their work by the end of February of 2025. And that's everything.
Thank you very much. Now we will go to testimony. Up first, we have Libby Murphy, and Yes, forgot the spreadsheet. We'll go to Ms. Heimer. Thank you.
You're welcome. Chair Howard and members, Katrina Heimer with House Fiscal. I'll be going through an overview of the spreadsheet. As you can see, the total proposed changes in the DE amendment to 4194 results in $10 million of spending in fiscal year 25 and $1 million of spending in fiscal year 27 for a total of $1 million in spending in fiscal years 26 through 27. On line 7 of the spreadsheet, you'll see the funding for the Housing Affordability Preservation Investment Program. Which my colleague, Mr. Cope, explained was on in Section 47. This program will be funded with $50 million, which is funded through a reallocation of funds that have not yet been allocated from the Housing Infrastructure Program, Housing Infrastructure Bonds, the cash that was administered last year, and the Community Stabilization Project. Line 10 highlights that the FHPAP, or Family Homelessness Prevention Assistance Program, will get $9.43 million in fiscal year 25. 10% of that is allocated to the tribes in the state of Minnesota, and so that is the next line. Line 12 highlights a $1,000 grant to the Wilder Foundation for conducting their Minnesota homeless study. My colleague, Ms. Davis, talked about the working group on CICs and HOAs, which is line 16, and that's funded through $200,000 appropriation fiscal year 25. And line 15, the Emergency Rental Assistant Working Group implementation to develop program recommendations will be funded with $270,000 appropriation to MHFA. Housing infrastructure bonds, as Chair Howard highlighted at the beginning of our hearing today, will be funding $50 million, which results in a cost of $1 million in fiscal year 27. However, there are ongoing costs. There will be a cost of $2.8 million in fiscal year 2028 and $4 million in fiscal year 2029 and ongoing for the life of the bonds. And that concludes the spreadsheet. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we will go to testimony. First, we have Libby Murphy and on deck, Kelly Law. Oh, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just double checking because I don't have the list of testifiers in front of me. Will we be hearing from MMB?
Yes.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Kelly first, excuse me. Oh, there. You're already up, I suppose. All right.
Sorry, I wasn't sure lunch would be here. It was.
Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Hello, Chair Howard, members of the committee. Glad to be in front of you again today. I think my testimony will be brief. Minnesota Housing Partnership is excited about this bill that's moving forward. Housing instability is devastating, so investing most of the target in the Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Program to stabilize families is the best thing that this committee can do this session with those limited resources. Homelessness, if it ever occurs, should be short and limited in its duration. An FHPAP can help ensure that families who are experiencing homelessness are doing so for as short of a period of time, if not preventing homelessness in the first place. Additional resources for bonds are critical to address the deficit of over 100,000 units that are available and affordable to extremely low and very low income households. Bonds are our state's best tool to leverage federal resources to build and preserve housing for our most vulnerable households. Homelessness is a housing problem. It is due to the lack of shortage of housing that we have, the shortage of housing that we have. So anything to build more homes is desperately needed. No Minnesotan should experience any duration of homelessness, and building is critical to ensuring that we can address this epidemic. Thank you for the $50 million that will be going to SHORP. Like FHPAP, which keeps families stably housed, SHORP resources will help prevent displacement and help ensure that the residents in the homes provided by our nonprofit providers are well-maintained, safe, and dignified. Lastly, a source of income protections or the Housing Stability Act is critical to ensuring that people who have that golden ticket, that limited voucher, limited rental assistance can find housing. No voucher should be returned as people have to shop around and they can't find a landlord to accept that voucher. So this is critical, and we just appreciate all the work that's been done over the years to move this forward, and we are hoping that this year is the year we can get that across the finish line. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Kelly Law, and on deck, Ellen Solly. Welcome to the committee.
Chair Howard, members of the committee, my name is Kelly Law, and I'm a senior policy and field building advisor with the Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers, MCCD. MCCD is a consortium comprised of nonprofit affordable housing developers and economic development organization based in communities across Minnesota. I'm here to testify today in strong support of the House Housing Omnibus Bill. This bill represents a balanced approach, making supplemental investments and changes needed to address the housing needs across Minnesota. We believe that this bill makes important changes to housing infrastructure bonds that will provide new resources to preserve deeply affordable housing. Since HIBs were created in 2012, the legislature has invested nearly $700 million, helping to permanently house 7,000 Minnesota households across the state. Right now, about one-third of those households are at risk of losing their housing because nonprofit affordable housing providers are struggling to keep their properties open with many new challenges outside of their control. This bill ensures that resources will be made available to preserve our existing supply of deeply affordable rental housing, which provides safe and stable housing to thousands of families across Minnesota. This bill also expands HIB so that they can be used to support the development or conversion of affordable housing cooperatives, which is necessary to ensure that Minnesotans have access to diverse affordable housing options. We also support the new investments in the Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Program, which will provide critical aid to families at risk of losing their housing. Thank you, Chair Howard, and members of the committee for bringing this bill forward, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. Next, we have Ellen Solly, and on deck, Nancy Nord-Benz. Welcome to the committee.
Hi, thank you, Chair Howard and members. My name is Ellen Solly. I'm president of the Family Housing Fund. In March, I testified to this committee, and I'm pleased to be here again today to voice my support for this consolidated bill. And today, I'm representing the Family Housing Fund as well as the Greater Minnesota Housing Fund, and both organizations support this bill. This consolidated bill represents the work of many, including partners in the housing community who have been steadfast in highlighting the need for policy changes and more resources to ensure continued investment in vital rental housing infrastructure. This bill also weaves together components that will help our neighbors maintain housing stability. And I want to highlight two specific areas that are meaningful in this bill. First, we support the Housing Affordability Preservation Investment Program funded through $40 million of previously housing infrastructure bonds, cash, and the redirection of $10 million of community stabilization fund. This creates a new definition of recapitalization to support distressed existing affordable rental buildings. Additionally, the creation of the Task Force on Long-Term Sustainability of Affordable Housing will help evolve the public finance system and practices and policies to ensure better viability for these developments funded with taxpayer investment. Finally, the clarification of the local sales tax will position local governments to be true partners in the preservation of affordable rental housing. When I testified in March, I shared the significant financial pressures that the affordable rental housing providers are facing. Recapitalization of existing rental housing is essential because these existing rental properties are home to low-income families who rely on this rental housing. Second, there are a number of recommendations in this consolidated bill from the work group on expediting rental assistance and a proposal for additional funding for FHPAP. I was an active member in the work group and fully support the items in this bill that speak to the recommendations of the work group. In my work in emergency financial assistance, it has taught me the complicated system that one has to navigate to secure needed financial assistance. We can build a better system, and this consolidated bill provides the framework and funding to do so. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Reverend Nancy Nord-Bentz, and up on deck, Cecil Smith. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Howard, committee members. I'm Reverend Nancy Nord-Bentz, public policy manager at Beacon Interfaith Housing, a nonprofit collaborative that creates new supportive housing, sustains 20 affordable housing developments for over 1,100 residents, and advocates for every Minnesotan to have a home. I'll begin by thanking Chair Howard and so many others for the incredible work you have put into preparing this composite bill. Your dedication to finding courageous and creative solutions to the affordable housing crisis is deeply appreciated. There's a lot of good in this bill. I'd like to highlight four provisions. One, the addition of recapitalization as an eligible use of housing infrastructure bond funds in supportive housing, as well as the clarification that 50% of the units must be set aside for those without a permanent residence. The clarification will create more stability and sustainability in the supportive housing model. Two, the creation of the Housing Affordability Preservation Investment Program, which will provide $50 million to support the recapitalization of distressed buildings. This is crucial to preserving our existing affordable housing stock and improving the quality of life for our residents. We also appreciate the broadness and flexibility of the definition of recapitalization, which includes funding deferred maintenance, security services, insurance, capital improvements, resources for supportive services, and operations. Three, the addition of supportive services and operations as eligible uses of metro local government assistance, and the stipulation that local assistance must supplement, not supplant, existing expenditures. And four, the creation of the Task Force on Long-Term Sustainability of Affordable Housing, which will help prevent a funding crisis of the current magnitude from occurring again. We asked you to include all these critical new provisions, and you listened. Thank you. Chair Howard and committee members, we look forward to continuing discussions with you to create long-term systemic solutions to the challenges facing nonprofit affordable housing developers. The Minnesotans who need the support of housing we create deserve no less. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Cecil Smith, and on deck, Shyla Johnson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Cecil Smith. I'm President and CEO of the Minnesota Multi-Housing Association, representing 2,200 members who own and operate 300,000 units of rental housing, serving 600,000 residents. I'm here today to provide our perspective on the supplemental housing omnibus bill 4194. I first want to thank the chair for the task force on the long-term sustainability of affordable housing. As a long-time owner and operator, I know firsthand the dedication and effort it takes to maintain affordable housing. It's important for policymakers to be fully informed on the challenges facing housing providers when considering new regulations. The task force will help inform efforts to sustain our state's vitally important affordable housing stock. As I provided in testimony to the committee last year, long-term sustainability of housing is negatively impacted by many factors out of a housing provider's control. These costs include interest rates, taxes, insurance, security, failed tenancies, and the unintended consequences of regulations such as rent control. Article 2, Section 22 is a rent control policy applied to senior LIHTC housing. As members of MHA have pointed out in written comments to the committee today, implementation of this policy would be disastrous for the long-term sustainability of senior LIHTC housing providers. While this proposal is narrowly focused on a specific program, it will lead to broad avoidance and disinvestment in this housing product, which is the opposite of what is needed to address our state's housing shortage. If the goal is to create and preserve housing affordability for low and middle income seniors, the state should look at other options, such as supplemental assistance. Given the demographics of our state, Minnesota needs to produce substantially more senior affordable housing in the coming years. This provision undermines that effort. In Article 3, Section 1, there's a requirement for participation in the federal government's Section 8 Housing Choice Voucher Program. Section 8 is a voluntary federal program. Housing providers choose whether or not to participate in the program. As the state of Minnesota continues to invest in housing, more rental housing opportunities have become available to voucher holders. Since 2019, Minnesota Housing has invested in over 7,000 new multifamily rental units that have agreed to accept Section 8 vouchers in their development agreements. Additionally, as we have seen successfully executed in certain jurisdictions, the appropriate way to increase and sustain participation is through incentives and partnerships. MHA remains opposed to compelling a housing provider to sign a contract with the federal government. I want to end by thanking the chair and the committee members for the continued drive toward emergency rental assistance that is responsive to an individual's circumstances. The current process for emergency rental assistance is antiquated, and it should be modernized to ensure accessibility for those who qualify. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. Next, we have Shyla Johnson, and on deck, Scott Cordes. It looks like you got a co-testifier, too.
Yeah.
Welcome to the committee.
Hello, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Shyla Johnson. This is my son, Emmerich. We're with Streetwise from Duluth, Minnesota. I'm going to be sharing my testimony, but first I'm going to read a member of my Streetwise testimony who couldn't be here today. So I'll read hers first. Hello, Chair and committee members. My name is Megan Sandman. I live at 1531 East 1st Street, Apartment 6, Duluth, Minnesota, 55812. I'm the mother of three children. When I received my Section 8 voucher, I was told I had 90 days to use it. The apartments I wanted would not accept the voucher, with one landlord telling me that he did not want to rent to anyone with a Section 8 voucher because of how badly they treat the apartment. Other landlords did not give a reason for their not accepting my voucher, but time was passing by fast. I became desperate to find an apartment. I got a call at the last minute that one became available as the renter suddenly left. I took it. Moving in with my children was difficult as a 17-year-old boy was shot and killed on the sidewalk with a memorial demonstrating where it happened. We had to be careful to not step over the memorial as we moved in. The look on my children's face was indescribable, especially my 15-year-old, as I found out he knew the boy. As this is why the apartment became suddenly available, the people moved out in a hurry because they were now afraid to live there. I had no choice. We moved into what some people would call a trap house. Strangers have broken the main door to the building so they can use drugs and draw graffiti on the walls. I'm constantly picking up needle caps and other paraphernalia so my kids never have to see it. I'm in support of the Housing Stability Act as I feel I should not have been refused apartments because I had a Section 8 voucher, and I should have had more choices of safer places to live in. Places that don't have crumbling walls or barely working plumbing are places without mice or rats. Right now, I feel trapped in an unsafe place.
Thank you very much. Oh, you still get, yeah. Okay. I know that you had to readjust shoulders, and I got you.
Here, you want Mel? Okay, hello, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Shiloh Johnson, and I live at 8941 Edwards Street. I am a mother to my 2-year-old son, Emmerich. I was attending college in 2022 while struggling of having to go live in a domestic violence shelter with my son. After I spent three months there, I went to Gateway through Lifehouse, where I lived in a transitional housing program from November until May of 2022.
Oh, I need to read that. I gotta read that, Emmerich. Let me see. Mommy's gonna read it. Here, look. Let me see, I got right this.
Okay. After I spent 3 months there, I went to Gateway through Lifehouse, where I lived in a transitional housing program from November until May of 2022. I felt like I was on a path to improving my life because of this program. As I am attending college, I secured stable housing where I live now. I felt good about myself being a single mother, attending college, living in our apartment, and I had 2 part-time jobs that I could bring my son to. The property manager stated...
Let me see.
You're getting this amount of money, school money, so therefore your rent will be increased according to this funding you receive.
Yeah.
Okay. You're getting this amount of school money, so therefore your rent will be increased according to this fund you receive. I just moved into my new apartment. When you turn 24, we will then lower your rent, as we will stop counting your school money. My eviction notice is about not paying my rent. I can't keep up with it along with everything else I need, even though I don't get school money every month. Still, it is counted as extra income. Therefore, I support the Housing Stability Act because many of us single mothers like me are trying to improve our life by receiving funding to go to college. We should not be penalized every month, fearing that the next month we will be homeless. Stable housing means I am supported to go to college as a single mother who receives funding to go to college and not be penalized, which causes me to be in unstable housing. I've been homeless before, so this scares me and scares me for my son, and my goal is to make it in this world. Please support the Housing Stability Act. Please support us single mothers out there to achieve our goals to make it in the world with a secure house over our heads. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you, Emmerich.
Emmerich.
Next, we have Scott Cordes, and on deck, Assistant Commissioner Hassermer.
Okay, let's go sit down.
Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Chair Howard, members of the committee. My name is Scott Cordes. I'm Chief Financial Officer and Senior Vice President of Operations at Project for Pride and Living. PPL is a 52-year-old affordable housing nonprofit. We own and operate 1,600 units of affordable housing across the Twin Cities. 3,500 people live with us every single day, and nearly half of them are children, and about half of our units are permanent supportive housing some of the lowest income residents with the highest needs in our community. At a time when more Minnesotans are increasingly cost burdened and unable to find affordable homes, the last several years have taken a toll on affordable housing infrastructure as operating costs have skyrocketed while revenues have rapidly decreased. An example of this was borne out in a recent survey of nonprofit operators by the Minnesota Housing Partnership that found approximately 3,500 affordable housing units are at risk of sale or loss due to rental income not keeping pace with operating and service costs required to preserve these homes at a time when we desperately need more homes, not fewer homes. Given these challenges, I'm pleased to speak in support of several of the provisions included in House File 4194 that have been developed in concert with over 30 nonprofit housing organizations, which are focused on addressing these challenges through both systems change as well as reinvestment in critical housing infrastructure. These include the creation of the Housing Affordability Preservation Investment Program, which invests $50 million in housing infrastructure to create new and expanded ways of revitalizing existing affordable housing that will help keep distressed properties, distressed properties recover and ensure high quality housing is available for the next generations of residents that need them. The new funding included in this bill, including the $50 million in housing infrastructure bonds and nearly $10 million for FHPAP, will continue the trend of much needed new investments in housing development across the state to help keep pace with the ever-growing need and help support the households of highest need to remain stably housed. We're also grateful for this body's creation and support in 2023 for the Metro sales tax for housing, and can't understate enough how impactful that legislation is going to be. Our local partners have been really great in connecting and engaging to find the best ways to put that money to use, and we're excited about the expanded and clarifying uses of that money that's included in this bill. Finally, the Task Force on Long-Term Sustainability of Affordable Housing will help ensure that the existing tools that fund the creation and sustainability of affordable housing are optimized and continue to work well for operators and residents alike in the post-pandemic era. Given the limited resources that are available this session, we're really grateful for the priorities laid out in this bill. We look forward to working with you to advance these proposals, and thank you for your support of affordable housing across the state of Minnesota.
Thank you. Next, Assistant Commissioner Hesmer, and on deck, Renee Rock. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jennifer Hassamer, Assistant Commissioner for Debt Management at Minnesota Management and Budget. Thank you for the opportunity to make some brief comments today on House File 14. I'm sorry, I have the omnibus bill not written down here. And I'm going to limit my comments just to Section 32 of the omnibus amendment before the committee today, which is the public corporations provision that would allow public housing authorities to participate in the federal rental assistance demonstration program. MMB is concerned to see the inclusion of this language in the omnibus amendment before the committee and would respectfully request that it not advance further towards enactment without additional conversation with stakeholders. We recognize the need to ensure public housing authorities, or PHAs, can access needed resources for ongoing operating and maintenance needs. And to that end, MMB and MHFA sent a joint letter to the Housing and Capital Investment Chairs last week, identifying pathways currently available to meet these goals. The committee should have received a copy of this letter in your materials for today. Our concern is that the language from House File 4271, as amended in the omnibus amendment, does not solve the underlying challenges in a way that removes uncertainty or that meets the apparent goals of the housing advocates, as stated in their written testimony for today. While we appreciate the attempt in the delete all to include some additional language to establish these public corporations as political subdivisions of the state, MMB is concerned that these changes may create structures that are more complex and uncertain and that may inhibit or slow the distribution of these much needed resources. Specifically, the prior language in House File 4271 has been changed to allow these newly created public corporations the power of eminent domain. However, the bill does not give these public corporations any resources to compensate for any takings of private property. This begs the question of whether there is a real intent for these public corporations to carry out the eminent domain power. And if there is an intent for these public corporations to take private property, then it begs the question of what resources will be used or requested to provide just compensation. On the other hand, I will refer back to the joint MMB and MHFA letter in your materials that identifies avenues available under current law for public housing authorities to access both state general obligation bond funds and additional federal resources. We hope that letter can be a living document that provides useful guidance, and to that end, we will welcome the opportunity to have further conversations with stakeholders to continue improving its utility. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Renee Rock, and on deck, Deidre Schmidt. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Hello, Chair Howard and committee members. My name is Renee Rock. I am a policy fellow with Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. With over 70 member organizations from across the state, we work to generate policies, community support, and resources for housing and services to end homelessness in Minnesota. We also prioritize the Family Homelessness Prevention and Assistance Program. We want to thank the committee for including one-time funding for FHPAP. MCH has known the value of this program for many years. It is the most flexible source of preventing homelessness that the state has. Some of the key terms we want to lift up are local FHPAP advisory committees work together to determine how they will prioritize the funds from the expansive list of eligible uses. Homelessness is something that needs local, regional, and statewide efforts, and FHPAP allows this to happen. The funds also touch the entire housing continuum. To touch on just a few, it includes everything from outreach, flexible financial assistance, keeping a home, getting into a home, and even helping with mortgages. While the name of this program makes it seem it is only for families, it actually can be used for individuals as well. Last year, there was a tribal carve-out for FHPAP, and so does the House bill. We want to lift this up because according to the Minnesota Homeless Study, 95% of people on reservations were experiencing unsheltered homelessness, compared to 32% in greater Minnesota and 18% in the 7-county metro. This is one way we can address the racial disparities we see within homelessness. Many of the eligible uses of FHPAP funds were lifted up by the Minnesota Tribal Collaborative in order for it to work with our communities. While we know the need needs ongoing funding for FHPAP, we applaud this committee for investing such a significant amount of your budget towards this important program. This will go a long way in making a difference in people's lives. MCH often says that shelter saves lives and housing ends homelessness, but in an ideal world, we would be able to prevent homelessness from happening, and FHPAP is a program to do just this. Thank you for allowing me to speak to you today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we have Deidre Schmidt. Welcome to the committee.
Hello again, Chair Howard, members of the committee. My name is Deidre Schmidt, and I'm the president and CEO at Common Bond Communities. At the risk of overstaying my welcome and number of visits with you, I'm back again today. And I want to lead with the incredible appreciation and understanding I've gotten over these last couple of sessions about the difficulty of being in your seats. I have just watched over these last couple of sessions the deluge of concerns and requests for funding and for your time and focus, and I've been watching how attentive you have been, how much you've listened and learned about the complicated housing delivery system, and you have evolved your legislative agenda in response to that. It is a complicated ecosystem where our interests are intertwined. It's an ecosystem where the distress of residents and the difficulties of properties and the compromised health of both nonprofit and some for-profit housing organizations, and the actions of both capital providers interface with government funding, policy, and regulation at all levels. But I also believe that our interests really are aligned on some basic levels. It is not in owner interest to have rent burden residents. In 2023, at Common Bond's portfolio of 7,200 units, 1,000 of our households were eligible for eviction for non-payment of rent. Our efforts, along with philanthropy and emergency rental assistance, avoided eviction for almost all of those households. I urge you to continue pushing for emergency rental assistance and consider permanent rental assistance as an alternative to rent control to benefit both resident and property health. It's not in the interest of residents to live in a property where rents cannot cover the expense of operations. Staffing levels drop, maintenance can be slow or deferred, and more of our properties are in this situation even since the last time I testified. And it is only because of Common Bond's ability to fundraise and the SHORP resources that you helped to make available from last year's session that we're able to keep the lights on. And it's not in the interest of public or private funding partners to have residents and properties and owners struggle as much as we are now. Many lenders and investors on the private side are becoming cautious about investing in new and preserving affordable housing because they see an increased risk of financial difficulty and default. I am so impressed by what you were able to accomplish last session, and I want to say again how grateful I am for your leadership and vision between SHORP and 4D and the sales tax. You really accomplished quite a bit, and I'm also impressed by what you're attempting to accomplish this year in spite of the fact that you have fewer resources to allocate. In particular, I want to voice my support for the Housing Affordability Preservation Investment Program, which seeks to restructure and reinvest in properties whose physical needs and operating costs cannot be addressed by actions of owners alone. Please understand that reestablishing health in our affordable housing system is a multi-year investment, and know that we intend to be here working alongside of you each step of the way because we believe it is in our common interest. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And usually we let the commissioner bat lead off, but today the commissioner gets to bat cleanup. So last but not least, we'll have Commissioner Ho. Welcome back to the committee, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Howard, and thanks for your flexibility in terms of timing today. I really appreciate it. Members of the committee, I'm Jennifer Ho. I'm the Commissioner of Minnesota Housing. I haven't spent as much time with you this session as I have in previous sessions. It's nice to be back. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on your supplemental budget bill and for the thoughtful conversations this session. We appreciate the inclusion of the governor's recommendation for source of income protection, for the $50 million in new housing infrastructure bonds, and for all of the agency's policy and technical changes. Thank you. We opened our 2024 consolidated request for proposals last week and anticipate the $50 million in housing infrastructure bonds will be committed to projects later this year. The inclusion of the governor's policy recommendations will clarify both existing and new program language, adapt to growing needs for resources, and help us be better partners. With the $10 million one-time target, we appreciate that most of the increase is being put into the Family Homeless Prevention Program with bill language that will help expedite getting those resources into communities to help both renters and property owners pay their bills. While the letter I submitted ahead of today's hearing captures our thoughts on a number of items, I want to speak specifically to the provisions regarding rental preservation and recapitalization. We appreciate the goal of putting more resources into preserving the state's existing housing through the creation of the Affordable Housing Preservation Investment Program. The agency is spending significant time and resources alongside other housing funders, working with property owners to better understand and to address the financial challenges they currently face. During last year's consolidated RFP, over 40% of the units that we selected were for preservation. We're committed to continue to lead and to work alongside property owners and other housing funders. The proposed changes and new eligible uses to housing infrastructure bond statute, along with the redirecting of $40 million in 2023 housing infrastructure appropriations to this new program, will reduce the number of consolidated RFP applications to preserve housing with federal rent assistance that we'll be able to select this year. This includes both HUD Section 8 and USDA RD properties. We're ready to work with you as this bill progresses and heads to conference committee. Thanks for your continued commitment to going big so more Minnesotans can go home.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I just got a note that we had an additional testifier. Mr. Franco would like to testify. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. For the record, my name is Lucas Franco. I'm here on behalf of Leuna, Minnesota, and North Dakota. We are a union of more than 14,000 proud men and women who build and maintain our state's critical infrastructure. I'm here to speak in favor of this bill. In particular, I'm here to express strong support for Article 2, Section 14. Section 14 establishes important measures to prevent wage theft and other forms of abuse on publicly subsidized projects. As you've all heard before, illicit employment practices are widespread in the construction industry. It's reported that over 20% of Minnesota construction workers are misclassified or paid off the books. Often these illicit practices are happening on publicly financed housing projects as detailed in a 2023 North Star Policy Action Report. In this report in particular, it documented proven or alleged exploitation of workers on 33 affordable housing projects funded either through tax increment financing or low-income housing tax credits. Criminal wage theft and worker misclassification not only harm workers, but they undercut the contractors, many of which we represent, that try to play by the rules. We need to build more housing, but we can't let public dollars fund low-road contracting practices and worker exploitation. The language in Article 14 will ensure the responsible use of taxpayer money by implementing robust labor standards on grant and tax incentive programs. At its core, this language works to prevent illicit practices on publicly subsidized projects in three important ways. Number one, it expands prevailing wage coverage on LIHTC projects. Prevailing wage policies not only ensure a level playing field for local contractors, but they increase payroll transparency, making it very hard for contractors to misclassify workers. Second, it prevents the use of problem contractors on all types of MHFA-funded projects by applying the responsible contractor law. And third, it closes accountability gaps by ensuring that businesses throughout the contracting supply chain take responsibility for the practices that occur on their projects. Illicit practices are institutionalized in the construction industry. We've made enormous progress here in Minnesota, rooting out crime in the industry, but we clearly have more work to do. We can't rely on enforcement alone. We must invest in prevention to stop crime from happening in the first place. And that's exactly what this bill does. Article 14 will break the pattern of problem contractors working on publicly subsidized projects. It will ensure that public money supports contractors that play by the rules and pay their workers fair, family-sustaining wages. Thank you for your work on this legislation and for your consideration of this bill.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public that would wish to testify? If not, we have about 20 minutes left, and we can go to member discussion, or we could hold that up to tomorrow. I'm fine with let me just go to Lee Johnson and see what he'd prefer.
Now that we've had an explanation of some things, I think we might be best just hold off till tomorrow so we have better.
I see Representative Petersburg has a burning question, though. So
no, I think I have a burning question for one of our testifiers, and
okay.
I think that's the time to do it today.
Sure.
Rather than that, and so I'm inquiring if MMB would be willing to come back down to the table. Because otherwise, waiting till tomorrow, they may not be here. So
that makes sense. If we have a question or two, that makes sense, and then we can do the broader discussion tomorrow.
Well, while she's coming to the table, Mr. Chair, if I
can
say that MMB is kind of our watchdog for us to keep us out of legal trouble, and especially when it comes to bonding, they kind of are the last word in it. And as a matter of fact, I know that last year a project in Southwest Minnesota was held up because MMB believes that it was unconstitutional for the bonding dollars to be let for that. And so when MMB says that they're not sure that bonding is available for these PHAs, the public housing authorities that were put there, I think it's something we should listen to. So am I correct in what I heard you say is that under your interpretation, MMB's interpretation, they would not qualify for bonding and would therefore would create a problem with this bill? If you'd have that answer.
Assistant Commissioner Hassmer.
Mr. Chair and Representative, it's a good question, and as Chair Howard knows, we've had many complicated and sometimes fruitful and sometimes frustrating conversations on this very exact point. What MMB has communicated to the stakeholders and in the letter that is in your materials is that there is some uncertainty in the bill language that was included in as part of the omnibus bill here, that it is not an absolute certain green light that these new public corporations that are attempted to be created would be eligible for bond funds. Instead, we would need to look at each public corporation on a case-by-case basis and make individual determinations.
Representative Petersburg.
And if I could follow up, now, I'm not sure if maybe you or the commissioner might be able to tell. If MMB determines that it's not eligible, how will that impact this bill and the policies within it for these particular organizations?
Assistant Commissioner Hassmer.
Mr. Chair, Representative. The most likely, it's hard to predict the future and what exact questions might bubble up. It could be that an entity requests funding through MHFA. It is an MHFA program for public housing preservation projects. And in consultation with MHFA, if one of these entities was not deemed eligible, then the bond funds would not be made available to that project.
All right. Thank you. I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Petersburg. I would just note that appreciate the letter from MMB, and we've changed the legislation to reflect from that letter, and so I did appreciate that feedback, and it's incorporated in the language. Any other questions for testifiers? If not, members, we will be back tomorrow to vote this bill out and have further discussion. With that, we are adjourned.